Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Victoria, British Columbia, and earned a BS in education from Tulane University, and while there played football for 4 years. Drafted by the Detroit Lions in 1980, he played 19 seasons in the NFL as a kicker. And on January 30th, 1994, he kicked 3 field goals in Super Bowl 28, earning a Super Bowl ring as a member of the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Today, he's the director of donor relations for Hope Network. His name, Eddie Murray. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the director of donor relations for Hope Network. We all know him, Eddie Murray, the famous kicker in the 80s and early 90s for our Detroit Lions. Eddie, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks again, Jack. Great seeing you. Thank you for having me.
You grew up in Victoria, British Columbia. Talk about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please.
Sure. Yeah, I was born a Canadian. I was actually born in Halifax, Nova Scotia, which was the East Coast Naval Base for the Canadian Navy. My father was in the Navy. He was a career naval officer for 25 years, served in World War II and Korean War. But he was English. And at that time, Canada was part of the Commonwealth of England. And so he served under the Canadian flag, but he was English. When he retired in 1960, he actually moved the family to Portsmouth, England. So I actually lived in England from 1960 to 1970. And of course, growing up from 5 to basically 15 years old, playing a lot of soccer and rugby. And so that was kind of my influence as far as sports at that point in time. And unfortunately, my father had passed away shortly before my 15th birthday. And my mother wanted to be closer to her family that lived in Canada during her time of grief. So we moved to Victoria, British Columbia, where most of her relatives were at that time. So most of my Canadian years were in Victoria. Unfortunately, my mother passed away about a month before I went to Tulane University in 1976.
Eddie, what's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Mother was family and love and faith. She was a devout Catholic. I was brought up Catholic. My father was Protestant, so my dad would drive my older brother and older sister and my mom and I to church every Sunday and wait for us in the parking lot to pick us up and take us home at that time. So her thing was faith and family. And my father, especially with being, a career naval officer like he was, it was really respect and, just treating others the way you wanted to be treated. His big thing was just, doing the right thing and doing it honorably. And those were the kind of traits that I learned from both my mother and father.
Other than Eddie Murray growing up in Victoria, the biggest thing about Victoria, British Columbia is Bouchard's Gardens.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that unbelievable place.
Yeah, it's stunning. I guess the comparison would be the Meyer Gardens that they have up in Grand Rapids. As a matter of fact, a high school friend of mine that in Victoria, his daughter is the general manager at Bouchard Gardens. And because of Hope Network being based in Grand Rapids, I happened to cross paths with the general manager of the Meyer Gardens. And we were talking, I told him where I was from, and he goes, "Oh my God, you're from where Bouchard Gardens is?" And so I reached out to my friend in Victoria, and his daughter sent him an unbelievable package of interesting things about Bouchard Gardens. It's a world-renowned gardens with fountains and hedges and plants and trees, and it's just stunning to have something as beautiful as that in one place, let alone that it's on Vancouver Island in Victoria, British Columbia.
All right. In high school, your high school team, school didn't have a football team. So you graduated, and then for a year you worked as a forklift operator in a lumber yard. And then you get to Tulane University in another great town, New Orleans.
Yes.
How did you ever get from British Columbia to New Orleans?
It was really happenstance. It was one of those forks in the road that everybody has in their life. And this one, what really put me on a trajectory for the success that I had, because I had no real big ambitions with my sporting life growing up. I had a passion for soccer and rugby. They were kind of my sports that I grew up with. And because of living in England, there's more of a passion behind your sport because of just how soccer is such a religion there. So, but with that being said, when I moved to Canada, they still had soccer and they still had rugby in the schools there. And you were correct. They didn't have football that were in the schools. They had football leagues that were sponsored leagues. The school systems didn't have the funding to support a football program during my time that I lived in Victoria. It has since changed. It's gotten better, and they do have football programs now, but it was 40 years later. So at the time, we had a construction group, and we would just, you know, pay like $100 a year, and you get to play football. And that had moms, dads would come and coach and all that kind of stuff. And what ended up happening, I attended a football camp in Vancouver, where there were some local colleges that were there. And it was run by the British Columbia Lions there. We're having this camp. And what ended up happening at that camp, the head coach took some film of me kicking. And one of his old assistants when he was the head coach at San Jose State was a guy named Willard Wells. And Willard Wells had just signed as a new assistant coach under Larry Smith at Tulane University. And Willard was from Powell River, British Columbia. And so what ended up happening, he came into Vancouver to see his family in Powell River before he had to report to Tulane University. Stopped off to see his old head coach, Cal Murphy, when they were together at San Jose State, and walked in to say hello to him. And Cal Murphy actually has film of me kicking on the screen. And he said, "Who is this kid?" And he goes, "Well, it's a kid that was at our camp." And at the time in the Canadian Football League, they had these junior rules where you could bring college kids to camp just kind of like as a development type of thing. And you would have a handful. And they said, "Well, we're thinking about bringing this kid into training camp with us, but he's only 18 years old. So we're not quite sure what to do." And he says, "You mean that guy's got eligibility? I've been given the responsibilities of taking care of the kickers, and we need a kicker at Tulane." That's how I got found. I mean, you talk about the odds behind something like that happening, what was amazing. So from there, everything just kind of fell into place. The coach recruited me, brought me down on a recruiting trip. New Orleans is a beautiful city, especially from where I was in Victoria. So it was a pretty easy yes that I decided to go. And especially because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, my mother passed away about a month after I got back from my recruiting trip from cancer. So she unfortunately didn't get to see me attend Tulane at the time.
We're talking Eddie Murray. When we come back, we're going to ask him about him being drafted in 1980 in the 7th round by the Detroit Lions. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Eddie Murray. The Lions draft you in the 7th round in 1980. And in your rookie year, you win the NFC scoring title with 116 points. What did you earn the first year, Eddie?
Well, I was fortunate to be voted in because at that time, players and coaches voted and beat writers would vote, so they don't have fan voting for the Pro Bowl. So I got voted in as a rookie along with Billy Sims and Bubba Baker for the Lions to go and represent the NFC in the Pro Bowl, and ended up becoming the first rookie to be MVP in the Pro Bowl game. So that was a great honor for me after such an unbelievable rookie year.
What's the difference between the difference in the adjustment between playing college ball and Pro Bowl?
I think you could ask the same question with everybody. It's really the speed of the game, you know, and the size of the guys. And now it's even greater. You know, I remembered when I was a rookie, the biggest guy that we had on our team was Bubba Baker. Bubba was the biggest guy. Bubba was 6'6", maybe 280 pounds, 285 pounds. He was singularly the only biggest human that we had on that team. Our offensive line was about 265 pounds. Nowadays, you know, you're going to have 15 players over 300 pounds on a team. You're going to have maybe five of them over 350, and they all run faster at the sizes that there are now than we did back then. I mean, so it's the speed of the game. These athletes have become so unbelievably big and fast and talented. But at my era, that was really a common denominator, was the speed of the game, picking up coverages. If you're a quarterback, you know, recognizing coverages and making the adjustments and all that. So speed of the game is different.
Continuing about athletes, when most of us make a mistake, it's very tough for us to get over that mistake.
Sure.
Athletes have to quickly forget and get over the mistakes. How do you do that?
Well, I've made mistakes. You know, I'm known for missing the kick in San Francisco in the playoff game. That's what I'm known for in Detroit. They don't think of all the kicks that I made. But I always look at for myself how I evaluated me is, what do I do after that kick? How do I react after a miss? And one of the things I really, really worked hard at was, if I missed a field goal, I would not miss the next one. I really wanted to not get in somewhat of a rut. Did that happen sometimes? Yes. In the 20 years that I played, I think maybe it happened four times maybe that. And I'm guesstimating, because I know it was not a lot, where I had two or maybe three misses in a row and then I got back on track. I was very good at forgetting, concentrating on the next one and getting back on track really quickly. And it's difficult. It really is. I mean, you have to be a little, you know, water on a duck's back kind of thing. You got to let these things roll and just go to the next play and get ready for it. You know, some people have a harder time than others, but I know for myself, that's what I really concentrated on, was to make the next kick.
We're talking Eddie Murray. And over those 19 years, he had 527 extra point attempts. He made 521. He had 466 field goal attempts. He made 352, 76%. Talk about the heart of an athlete and the part that plays.
Well, that's the one thing you can't test as an athlete. You know, these players go to the combine, they have every test known to man, right, that these guys go through. They're being evaluated, pricked and prodded, and bench press and standing broad jump and 40s and shuttled. They do all these things. But the one thing you can't judge is a man's heart. And that's what separates the really good players that have the ability to make a team. I know that. You know, that there have been numerous examples. I'm not going to say who they are, but there were guys who, as an athlete, were unbelievably impressive. They were either super strong or they were very fast. And you would put the really fast guy thinking, okay, here's a guy who's really fast. He could really help us on coverage teams. So we put him on kickoff coverage. And then you put someone else in there who was maybe, you know, a couple of tenths slower than the other guy. But then running down and covering kicks, that's a different mentality. And inevitably, the quote-unquote slower player was beating the faster guy down the field, because the faster guy's heart wasn't into going down as fast as he possibly could, because he didn't want to get hit as hard. So those parameters are very difficult to judge in someone. And it really does separate just the really, really good players from the guys who just look really, really good.
All right. After 12 years with the Lions, you move over to the Cowboys. Big change. Talk about that portion of your career with the Cowboys.
Well, I had 1 year in Tampa, so I didn't go directly to Dallas. But yeah, I really had the fortune of playing with Sam Weish with Tampa Bay, and I loved him. He was a great coach. He was a great players coach. God rest his soul. I really liked him. And he was very influential in helping me with the Dallas Cowboys, because I know when it came down to the end, because I was at camp, I played the last half of the year after Detroit left me in 92 with Tampa, went to camp in 93 with Tampa. And at the last cut, they had some injuries in the last preseason game. Sam was going to go with me and Michael Husted, have two kickers, have Michael kick off, and he wanted me to help him. He knew he was good. He was just a little too raw, and he wanted me to help him, so he wanted to keep me around. And unfortunately, they had some injuries to some starters in the last preseason game, so he couldn't go with that. They had to bring in other players, and so they kept Michael and cut me. And he said, Ed, you, for your age, at that time I was 35, I think I was, 35 at the time. And he said, you've had an unbelievable camp. You deserve to play in this league. What team do you want me to give them a call? And I said, the Dallas Cowboys. 2 weeks later, I got called to try out for the Cowboys and ended up making the team and won a Super Bowl with them. It was a great experience.
You kicked three field goals in that Super Bowl, January 30th, 1994. What was that night like, Eddie?
I know for me, it was actually, I believe it was the first year that the NFL decided to play the Super Bowl the following week after the NFC and AFC championship game. So we had played San Francisco in Dallas for the NFC championship game, won the game. And the next day we were getting on a bus flying to Atlanta to play in the Super Bowl the following Sunday, where now they have that 2 week period. So for me going to the game, it was like a long road trip. Cause you know, you normally go Saturday, you play the game Sunday and come back Sunday night. So for me, it was just like another game. What affected me or what hit me or struck me about, oh my God, I'm playing in the Super Bowl, was I always had a habit of going over as early as I possibly could to the stadium, whether it was home or away, and just get settled in the locker room, get away from all the hustle and bustle. Don't want to get caught in traffic if it's a home game. Don't want to get caught in traffic if a team bus is behind something, there's a car accident. You know, all those things that bother you. I just didn't want any of that. I always like to go early. That was just me. And so I did. I kind of caught a cab with one of the trainers and they went over and getting ready. And I would always like to go into the stadium, just kind of walk around in, you know, in some shorts and t-shirt and stuff like that. And it was always quiet because the NFL rule at that time was they would open up the stadium 2 hours before the game to let fans in. Well, the Super Bowl, it's open 4 hours before because the arena is part of the game. You know, where it is, they got so much stuff, activities and bands and, you know, revelry all going on. And I remember going out onto the field and like the stands were half full. I mean, there had to be 25, 30,000 people already in the stands. The sidelines were packed with celebrities, where I was used to going out there and there was maybe, you know, 20, 50 people on the sidelines, both sidelines. And then maybe 1,000 people in the stands and 900 of them might have been workers, that kind of thing, you know, no fans. And I thought, oh, my God, look at all these people. And oh, my God, there's so-and-so and there's this celebrity and here's this singer. And I'm standing there enamoring with all this stuff. And I remember my stomach just starting to churn and I'm now getting nervous. I'm going, oh, my God, I'm getting nervous with what's going on. I ended up having the worst pregame warm-up ever in my career in the Super Bowl. And Steve Hoffman, who was the kicking coach at that time, and Joe Avezzano, who was a special teams coach, they came over and said, Ed, what is going on? I mean, God, you're all over the damn place. And I'm going, I'm nervous. And they go, what the hell are you nervous for? I mean, God, you're in your 14th year. You're 35 years old. you know, you've been playing this game forever. What are you so nervous about? It's just another game. Just look at it that way. And the thing that helped me, Jack, was we won the coin toss, so they kicked off to us. And we returned the ball to, like, their 40-yard line. We almost scored a touchdown in the opening. Kevin Williams was our return guy. And so we got all the way down there, and we went three downs, didn't get a first down, and I went out and I kicked the field goal. So, like, within the first minute and a half of the game, I'm out there, and I make a long field goal. I think it was the longest field goal of that day for me, but I made it. And then right after that, it just became another game. All of everything that was going on around me, I didn't even pay attention to it.
We're talking Eddie Murray. When we come back, we'll ask him about what he's been doing since 2009. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Eddie Murray. Eddie, in 2009, you joined Hope Network, and today, your director of donor relations. Tell us about Hope Network.
Well, first of all, I'm very fortunate to be involved with such a great nonprofit. Hope Network is about a 62-year-old nonprofit based out of Grand Rapids. I met them at a golf outing. I was asked to attend a golf outing, help bring some memorabilia for this golf outing to raise money for Hope Network. Met our CEO, Phil Weaver, at the time, and he thanked me for supporting the event and asked if I would be free for lunch the following week. And sure enough, I met with him. And during the lunch, he had asked if I'd be interested in sitting on Hope Network's foundation board. And I said, well, I've never sat on a board before. Phil, what do you want me to do? And he goes, well, I'm trying to open up our foundation board members and try to get more people from around the state to sit on the board. Most of our board members are from the western part of the state up in Grand Rapids. And I think you would be a good addition because we want to try to open up Southeast Michigan. And that's what I did. My first 6 years, I sat on their foundation board and working at the time, company I was working for got bought out. Redundancy was in place and I ended up getting let go. And attended the following board meeting, which was about a month and a half later. And Phil asked how things were going. I told him that I'd been let go from the company I'd been working for. And he goes, well, that's great. I'm going to now start paying you for what you've been doing for free. I said, I need you to be director of donor relations in Southeast Michigan for Hope Network. Would you want to do that? And I said, sure. And I said, what do you want me to do? And he goes, just keep doing what you're doing. Be an ambassador for Hope Network. And it's been an unbelievable ride. I know that Hope Network provides a lot of services throughout the state of Michigan. We provide them in all 83 counties, whether it's mental health, autism, reading programs. And we touch every county in some way with some of our service lines. And I've been very fortunate to be involved with them.
You're part of a 2,800-person staff. You help serve 30,000 plus people a year, and you've got a golf classic coming up on Monday, June 20th.
Yes.
All right. Oakland Hills.
No, Oakland University.
Oakland University. I'm sorry.
Yep.
HopeNetwork.org/golf classic. You mentioned the word autism.
Yes.
Eddie, what is autism?
Well, autism, unfortunately, the numbers have gone the wrong way. When I got involved back in 2009, 1 in 70 kids fell on the spectrum. Now it's 1 in 55. And unfortunately, the numbers are going the wrong way. I know there's a tremendous amount of research and trying to figure out exactly why those numbers are going that way. Hope Network specializes in early diagnosis. So from about age 2 to about age 6 is kind of our expertise in trying to help children navigate the early years of where they fall on the spectrum. So as they get older, they would hopefully then start being included into the regular school system. That's what we like to work on. There are other organizations that do different things and have different emphasis of what they try to do to support autism services. For Hope Network, we were providing autism services before it became before Medicare agreed to pay for those services back in 2013, I think was when the law changed. So we were providing, you know, services before that. So we've been very involved. I know it's become a little bit more of a passion for me here. We just opened up our newest autism facility at the old Ladywood High School facility next to Madonna University. So we took half of the building there. And about 9 months ago or so, we opened up our doors and we have the capability of servicing 100 kids a day. It's our largest facility. The other facilities, we have two in Grand Rapids, one in Holland, Michigan, and one in East Lansing. So it's a big service line for us.
If you want to learn more, www.hopenetwork.org. One of your newest initiatives is Autistic Talent Competition.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
I'll be honest. I'm stealing a fundraiser. I happen to see this on LinkedIn. San Diego County Autism Society just finished having a Autism's Got Talent, a virtual talent contest for autistic children. And I thought, man, what a great, now this was like a year and a half ago, I saw this thing. And so we're right in the midst of COVID. I've had my golf outing canceled because of event-based fundraising was definitely curtailed because of the COVID restrictions that were out there with people gathering and masking and social distancing. It just wasn't conducive to have an event-based fundraising. And I thought, what a great way to pivot and have a fundraiser, but what a great service line to do it with, to give parents the ability to control taking a video of their child rather than having the child do it in front of people, which is very difficult for some autistic kids to do things in front of public people, especially people they don't know. Where this way, it could be a fun event. It could, and we didn't care what it was. We really didn't care what the video would be. It's just something that they would care to highlight their child, have fun. Go to the website agtmi.org, which is autism.talentmichigan.org. And you can download a video of the child right now. People can go to those videos. And if they know the child, or even if they don't know the child, they want to go and support one of the children, they can go and they can pay for votes. It's a PayPal thing. You can pay $20, they get 20 votes. Or if you just want to make a donation, you can go there. There's a donation tab where you can just go, what a great event. I want to support Hope Network's autism services, and I can make a donation for $25, $50, $100 and go ahead and make a donation. So there's a couple of ways you can do it. We're going to have a winner, a voter's winner. So people who get votes from people, either their family, friends, neighbors, or someone who just wants to go and vote for a child. And then we also have a judge's side that's going on. So we have Brian Calley, our ex-lieutenant governor in the state of Michigan, who has a daughter who has autism. He's one of our judges. Our very own Dan Miller, who is the radio voice for the Detroit Lions, has a son who has autism, and he's one of our judges. And we have Freddie and Romina Bello from Freddie the Pizza Man Foundation. They have a son who has autism, and they're going to be our third judge. And we're going to have a judge's winner also. So a voter's winner and a judge's winner with this contest. So the contest right now, the first round of voting goes up till the end of April. And then the last round of voting starts May 3rd and ends May 10th.
If you want to watch the videos, donate, and or vote, agtmi.org. We're talking to Eddie Marie, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.
Anything is possible.
This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Eddie Murray. Since 2009, he's been the director of donor relations for Hope Network. Eddie, the new insurance bill.
Yeah.
It's affected a lot of people. Is it good? Is it bad? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm biased because of the effect that it's had on our neuro rehab service line. Because as you had mentioned before, those 30,000 individuals are mental health patients. And about 80% of that 30,000 are from car accidents that have had catastrophic head injuries and are getting neuro rehab from Hope Network. The other 20% of that 30,000 are people with stroke victims that are still having to get neuro rehab rehabilitation. So when we started hearing about them wanting to change the no-fault insurance law, and we kept thinking, wow, how's this going to play out? And there was a lot of, you know, behind the scenes, behind the doors, you know. And then when Governor Whitmer passed the law, it was like 1:30 in the morning when, yeah, the House was in session, but there wasn't a full membership there. And just the way she did it and the repercussions, in essence, yes, it gives people the ability to save money on their insurance. Yes, it gives you an option if you wanted to get enhanced benefits. But the bottom line is, people who get into car accidents, excuse me, and have these services and medical bills that grow. I mean, what we have, many of our patients that we deal with, that it's $250,000, $300,000 a year of service that they're getting for their neural rehab. Even if, you know, you were to get into an accident and someone had a $5-10 million policy, that money goes very fast. After that money goes, it's either private pay or you get Medicare coverage, and that's basically nothing. You don't get anywhere near the type of rehabilitative services that you could possibly get. So, in theory, it's doing what it said it was due, save money, all of these type of things, gives people options, but it really has not helped the people in the state of Michigan, as well as companies like Hope Network. There are numerous companies that within months of that law going into effect had to close their doors. So now you have the effect of people not getting services, the people who actually need the neural rehab. Then there are people that are providing the services. These people are angels. They are unbelievable caregivers and helping people to try to get back to some normalcy. Now these people are without jobs. So who cares if you're saving money? You have affected so many people in the state of Michigan because of this new no-fault insurance law. So we're hoping things can change. And our people in Lansing are doing what they possibly can to see if the governor will do that.
All right. What have the people that Hope Network serves taught you, Eddie Murray?
Really, anything's possible. But one of the things that I have just been astounded with over the years that I've been with Hope Network is Hope Network takes on a lot of different service lines. You know, there's a lot of things I haven't even talked about of the things that we do. And of those service lines, there are other people who do exactly the same work that we do. But there's also a percentage of those service lines that have really difficult cases, whether it's neuro rehab. You know, you're going to have a really bad case. You got someone who is going to have some difficulty getting to be able to walk, to talk, and all of those types of things. But you just have to provide them with a good quality of life is what you're trying to do. You may not get the results of getting back close to normal. With that, Hope Network doesn't turn anybody away. The one thing on the first line on their mission statement is they're a faith-based organization. And that meant a lot for me to be involved with someone. And they honor that first sentence in their mission statement unbelievably. They don't turn anyone away. They take on all the really bad cases and they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out because the other mantra they have is we help people overcome. That's what has impressed me too, is that they try to provide as the best quality of life a person can have with whatever service line that they're in that they need help with from Hope Network. And I'm just honored to be a part of this organization.
We're talking Eddie Murray, who had a 19-year career in the NFL as a kicker, the Lions, Tampa Bay, and the Cowboys. If you want to learn more, www.hopenetwork.org. Eddie, I've been blessed to have this for 17 years, this weekly show. Whenever I've had a person who's got a special needs son or daughter, they refer to those people as their angel, hero, gift from God, teacher, inspiration. Why so?
Sometimes you don't go into these things wishing for challenges like that, because it is. What when it happens to you, you know you're going to now be challenged as a human being. Your faith is going to be challenged. Your belief, your desires are all going to be challenged when you are presented with someone with autism or someone who has a brain injury, or you have a Down syndrome child and the challenges that they have to go and endure as they go through life. So not everybody can handle that. And so because of that challenge, I'm always extremely impressed with the parents of these people and the love that they have bestowed upon those children. And inevitably, it's not always, you know, it's not always they just have one child and that's it. It's amazing the other children that they have that end up not having autism or don't have Down syndrome. The closeness of that family unit is really special. It's tangible. It's palatable. You can see and feel it. And I'm always just really impressed with the people that we try to serve and their family, faith, and support.
Eddie Murray, God blessed you with a 1 in a million leg. But even more impressive, he blessed you with a phenomenal heart, an athlete's heart, and also a heart to give back.
Thanks
for all you do. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you for having me, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Pasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.
Believe in yourself.